Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount Plus.
He is just an obsessive goal scorer.
They have to understand I chose to stay in my country because I'm French.
And the Bernabeu blinks it back.
I haven't got a problem with soccer, to be fair.
Football.
What I can guarantee to you is that they want to keep everything secret.
I know Nigel missed me. He's back with his beard. Welcome, House of Champions YouTube friends. Drop in your comments and questions in the chat and make sure you hammer the like and subscribe buttons as we get stuck into all the action across Europe, including El Clasico, second leg of Copa del Rey in the House of Champions. Today, we have Jonathan Johnson with a beard. We have Michael LaHood with his regular beard. And we got Nigel Riofolker with an unusual looking beard right there, Nigel. What's going on, man?
I didn't want to shave until you came back. That's how much I missed you. Yeah, whatever.
I love you too. Hey, listen, great day, boys. It has been unbelievable action all across. We had Coupe de France in action here. JJ, we had obviously what was going on in the DFB, Pokal. We had Copa del Rey. We had some Premier League action. So there's a lot to discuss. So let's get into it. Of course, we begin at what happened at the Nou Camp or Camp Nou, depending on who actually says it. Barcelona getting absolutely hammered today by Real Madrid by 4-0. 45 minutes into the game, Vinny Jr. opened the score and Karim Benzema then backed it up with a second half hat trick. By the way, back-to-back hat tricks for Karim the Dream Benzema. Real Madrid have beaten Barcelona by at least a 4-goal margin for the first time since January 1995. And Karim Benzema scoring his first hat trick against Barcelona. Michael Hood, I'm coming to you first.
I didn't see this scoreline coming. I don't think anyone saw this scoreline coming, not even Madrid fans. Given the way the game started, Barcelona, they're on the front foot. They were peppering the goal. And I think it was a bit of naivety. And that midfield of Barcelona, they got overrun in the first half up until the goal. Mind you, the goal that started things off for Real Madrid came off a counter, came off a Lewandowski shot, which Courtois did well to save. But Vinny Jr., man, this guy is a freaking baller. He showed it tonight. Yes, Big Ben gets the hat trick, but Vinny Jr., he once again was just a thorn in Barca's side. And this guy's world class. We've been saying it throughout the season, and he keeps delivering and keeps putting Real Madrid on his back.
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes me back to the chat that we had a little while ago after Real knocked Liverpool out of the Champions League. Real, for the remainder of this season, are going to pick and choose the big games where they turn up, deliver a performance, Benzema especially. And that's, you know, what we saw tonight. I mean, you know, we can pick holes in Barcelona's performance as much as we want to, but, you know, Real Madrid are still capable of delivering those big game performances. And, you know, that is a statement, you know, for the remainder of the season as far as the Champions League goes. We know that La Liga is gone, but, you know, now to have a shot at Copa del Rey, salvage something on the domestic side of things and still potentially, you know, have that, you know, deep run in the Champions League as well. You know, I think Real will be quite satisfied with that. And it's, to be honest, I'm not really surprised that Real were able to get the win, but I was surprised by how they just blew Barcelona away. And some crazy stats coming out of this one as well. You know, Benzema is now the fourth highest all-time goal scorer in the Clásico fixture. He's two goals away from leveling both Di Stefano and Ronaldo. The only player he's probably not going to reach is Messi, given that Messi's 10 goals ahead still on 26. But that's pretty impressive for Benzema. And the crazy thing as well is that Sergio Busquets, was on the pitch when he made his debut back in, I think it was 2009, in his first Clásico. Mm-hmm. So for Benzema to have gone from, almost this, came very close to being cast out by Real to now being, in amongst the legends of this fixture, that is pretty wild.
Mr. Ian Joy, what's your thoughts on the game?
I thought it was an embarrassment from Barcelona in the second half. What was your thoughts, Nigel?
Mm-hmm. That's what you wanted to say, right?
That's it. I thought... Thanks, Nigel.
I thought Real Madrid were absolutely sensational. And they're sensational because, for me, they showed every side of football. Michael's already covered it. Barcelona started on like a house on fire. I thought this could be a drumming for Real Madrid the way that Barcelona started. But it's what we've always said about Barcelona. They play great football, but they lack that bite. They're so great to watch at times, but they lack that bite. That little bit in the end, that little bit of, that streetwise or street smart, you'd say they lack in that. Real Madrid weathered the storm. And I think Michael needs to put a lot more respect on Camavinga's name because he played left back. And he played left back at a position where Barcelona thought that that might be a weakness. We can attack him. And Camavinga, the top player that he is, said, okay, you think I'm soft? Try me. And he was sensational. And then to move him into midfield. If Real Madrid do sell him, as there's been rumblings of, he might leave, that is one of the biggest losses that can happen to this football team because he is absolutely sensational. And again, you look at the experience. It's not just the fact of we're watching top players play a game of football. Do we think it's simple? It's how they were coached, how they played so deep defensively, weathered the storm, and that counterattack to take the 1-0 lead towards the end of the first half was just absolutely sensational. That wasn't players taking, that was coaching at the highest level from Carlos Ancelotti, how he set them to play this game with Modric and Kroos starting in midfield, Valverde. I think for me, that is what you call football because Real Madrid show they can do both sides of the game, defensively without the ball and attacking with the ball. And for me, Vinicius Junior has proved that he is the star of La Liga. La Liga without Vinicius Junior, for me, will be struggling big time.
I agree with everything you said, Nigel, but on the flip side for Barcelona, it was a bit of naivety and maybe early coaching naivety from Xavi. On the first goal, they had eight players up the field and they were being baited into it. Marcos Alonso, what are you doing? There's three players for Real Madrid high up the field. And that's credit to Ancelotti and the Madrid attack. But Barcelona, wave after wave of attacks, sending that many players up in El Clásico, you are begging to be punished against an experienced side. Just a little tidbit in that match.
Let me give a shout out to Courtois as well. One of you mentioned it there. The first goal obviously came off a great opportunity. I think it was Lewandowski who hit the shot and it was a fantastic save from Courtois. I thought it was in the back of the net and all of a sudden he pulled out this wonderful save. Five saves, if I'm not mistaken, on the day as well, which basically having that foundation from the goalkeeper defensively very solid and then it allows your attackers to go play. I actually like the arrogance from the Vinny Jr. sometimes mixing it up in that. And right now you'll recognize that Barcelona just can't keep their heads at this moment in time. One more stat before we get out of here and just discuss Barcelona's problems right now is Karim Benzema has now been involved in eight goals, six goals he has scored, two assists from him in his last six Clásicos, El Clásicos in all competitions after being involved in just two, one goal, one assist in his previous seven. So really like a fine wine, he's improving as it goes on when it comes to El Clásico. JJ, I'll come to you on this one here when we discuss Barcelona's problems and what's happening right now. Of course, there is a lot to discuss here. Stadium, scandal, Negreira scandal as well. I mean, if you look at what's happening off the field for Barcelona, it's really kind of embarrassing. Obviously, we recognize this result, but off the field right now, things are going from bad to worse with Barcelona. I mean, we could get into details, but I want to hear from your point of view exactly what you think about Barcelona off the field right now, forgetting about what happened just on the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, so many of the questions related to Barca off the field, you know, all come back to the same thing, and that's money. You know, you've got the Negreira scandal, you know, in the background, no surprise to see sort of Barca clapping back and, you know, basically alleging that Tebas has, you know, played some role in that and demanding that he's ousted given, you know, sort of the power struggle that's been going on between them. You know, in the last, you know, few years, really. But I think, you know, perhaps one of the most worrying things is, you know, this match could be quite historic tonight because it's probably going to be the last Clásico, you know, in the Camp Nou as we know it, you know, before this renovation that's supposed to happen.
Good one to remember.
Yeah, this renovation, you know, Barca still don't know how it's going to be funded and exactly who's going to be redeveloping the stadium. It's wild. So since, you know, those plans were floated, you know, everything has changed. You know, the costs have skyrocketed. All of the original architecture team, you know, are completely gone. The permits still haven't been granted. So, you know, this idea that Camp Nou is suddenly going to start being knocked down in the next couple of months is pretty wild, you know, because, you know, there's no guarantee at this moment in time. Obviously, you'd expect things to change, but, you know, it's nowhere near, you know, the level it should be right now, this kind of project. And, you know, that, I think, just reflects everything, you know, that is, you know, not really going right at Barcelona. You know, they're a club trying to go places in a hurry, you know, trying to make up the ground that they've lost over the last couple of years. And if they're not careful, they're going to trip themselves up soon. And this kind of project, you know, could be exactly the thing that, you know, makes them stumble because, you know, they are, you know, balancing a lot of plates in the air at the moment, notably, you know, on the financial side of things. And it only takes one or two things to go wrong for that to all come collapsing down like a house of cards.
JJ, with Barcelona leading La Liga, with the financial just ruins of this club and the club it up in smoke, does that affect the legitimacy of La Liga and their standing in the league in terms of them leading it and maybe becoming champions?
I mean, I think that, you know, there have to be, you know, questions asked of La Liga in the last couple of years based on everything that's been alleged recently. I mean, I said it, I think, a couple of weeks ago as well. I'd also be sort of concerned at whether or not Barca tried to do the same thing in Europe as well. We've seen some dodgy performances, refereeing performances, you know, on the continental stage as well that have benefited Barca. I know that's rich coming from somebody who's followed PSG for all these years, but just saying it was a very, very suspicious refereeing performance that night for, you know, in Barca's favor. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, you know, unfortunately, it kind of takes La Liga and Spanish football into the kind of territory that you have sports like cycling, for example, where you kind of want to believe what you're seeing, you know, and sort of believe in, you know, how organic it is and its legitimacy. But there's always going to be that kind of nagging doubt in the back of your mind, especially when there's these, you know, these controversial issues. And if something, you know, goes Barca's way and you feel like the referee, you know, perhaps could have, you know, given the decision the other way, there will be for quite a while, I think, you know, in most people's minds, that feeling that, you know, that kind of sense of dread, you know, of, you know, are Barca up to their old tricks again kind of thing.
I also have two questions for all of us. Are we all in agreement that this could be the biggest mismanagement of a top level football club that we've ever heard of or seen?
Oof.
I mean, Chelsea and PSG the last couple of years are providing fairly good competition, but I think when you take into account all of, you know, the kind of meltdown aspects of it, you know, I definitely think Barca are up there as arguably the most mismanaged club of the last, if not 10 years, then at least five or so.
Yeah. Listen, I think that obviously, sorry, Mike, to jump in on you there, but I think when you think of the stadium situation, as JJ pointed out at the top there, we have no idea whether this is a good thing for Barcelona or not. We have no idea what's happening going forward. Real quickly, before we do move on from the scandal that is taking place, Nigel, I'm coming back to you on this one here. Obviously, UEFA president has stepped in and made some comments about the situation being extremely serious, so serious that, in my opinion, it is one of the most serious situations in soccer that I have ever seen. And that, of course, is in response to what's happening with the 7 million euro payments made to a company owned by former referee committee vice president Jose Maria Enriquez Negreira. Obviously, we get that. And Barcelona are expected to make a statement. Laporta is looking to explain in an extraordinary assembly on April 19th. So I'm intrigued to hear what they have to say about the whole situation. But right now, if we watch Barcelona, I only tune in to watch Lewandowski because I'm a fan of Lewandowski, but from the outside looking in at Barcelona right now, even after a performance like that, it is an absolute mess. And we have no idea what could happen with Barcelona. Your thoughts, Nigel?
I agree with you. I think it's an absolute mess. But my other question was going to be to everyone again, is there any justification for any football club to make payments to a company or business that the head of refereeing owns? Mm. I just don't think there can be any justification. And the reality of it is, I say it's the biggest mismanagement in football because of the success that they had and the fact of they weren't playing fair and following the rules. I'm not saying that they're not the only club that does that, but a club of Barcelona's magnitude, of all the players that they had, the financial mismanagement, everything that they did, and paying money into an organization owned by the head of the referee, it leaves a disgusting stain for me on your club and all those years of success. So I think it's very serious, the fact of the FIFA president coming out and say that, or the UEFA president coming out and say that, that they've probably got a lot of evidence that we haven't heard yet or seen, but it does put a stain. And you look at the performance today, it was something that we were going to say is the new start or the new style of Barcelona now without a Lionel Messi, but it's horrible.
Yeah, I think today's result is poetic justice for the off-the-field issues. This is a top-down affair. The fact that you can't even register players, you give Gavi a contract, and it's not clean through the books. You're selling shares. You're selling image rights. You were used to be one of the gold standards in European football because of the romanticization of Barcelona. I think that that is being tarnished with every day and every second that ticks given this year.
Yeah, one great comment coming in from Vic. He's not happy about the fact that you threw Chelsea in there, the most successful English club in the last 2 decades, in a mismanaged category. He's like, wait a minute, we've made a few mistakes, but we're not mismanaged, says Frank Lampard sitting in the stands yesterday.
Let's help Vic. Vic, you're 100% right. Chelsea shouldn't be in there because I think for me, Chelsea's more stupidity than actual common sense, while Barcelona knew exactly what they were doing, when they were doing, and they were successful for a long time. So Barcelona was really cheating while Chelsea was just complete mismanagement and stupidity. How's Modric doing for you, Vic?
Oh, interesting right there. JJ, before we do head to break, I've got to touch on the fact that Lionel Messi, the potential return to Barcelona, is clearly there. Everyone's talking about the meeting that's taking place with Barcelona. Can Barcelona get this deal done that they could get him back and finish his career at Barcelona? But realistically, you're the one that's followed Messi the closest over the last couple of years. It's certainly picking up steam that he could move to the Middle East. What's the latest there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the latest is not encouraging if you're a PSG fan. It doesn't sound like Lionel Messi will be around that much longer. Then again, I'm saying it's not that encouraging if you're a PSG fan, but it's the PSG fans who don't really want Messi continuing beyond the summer. So, you know, it sounds like they're probably going to get what they're hoping for. Personally, I think from the financial point of view, what PSG are looking at ahead of this summer, it makes sense to separate with Messi and Ramos now. That's not to say that Messi's been a flop with PSG. He hasn't. His second season's been much better than the first. But, you know, there's a massive amount of truth in, you know, saying that Lionel Messi's first half of the season was a lot better than his second. You know, and too many of the PSG players have been off the boil in the second half of the season after the World Cup. So Messi, you know, based on sort of what you saw Nasser Al-Khelaifi saying publicly, you know, while not saying anything publicly, you know, I think that speaks volumes about how close Messi, you know, is to the PSG exit right now. But the one thing that I would say is, you know, there's that saying, never go back. And I think that that rings especially true here. You know, everything that Messi has and, you know, his kind of legend at Barca was slightly you know, damaged sort of the way that he left the club. Not to say that, you know, he's not considered a club legend. Of course he is. You know, he's one of the biggest legends in modern football, let alone, you know, Barcelona's history. But he would put that in his hands and risk it all if he went back. And I don't think there's any guarantee that that would be successful. So I'm not, you know, suggesting that he should take the big money offer from Saudi Arabia, but equally, going back to Barca at this moment in time would be a desperation move from him to stay in Europe, but also from Barca trying to find some way out of this mess that they've created.
All right, well said. Let's get to a quick break, guys. More to come from the House of Champions boys when we return. Stick around.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help.
For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
If you are a US-based fan of the beautiful game, Paramount Plus is an absolute must-have subscription, from NWSL to the Champions League to Serie A and so much more in between. Not sure it's for you? Okay. Then you can try a 1 month for free by using the code NWSL2023. Welcome back. House of Champions is with you. Nigel Rio-Coker, Michael Lahoud, and Jonathan Johnson. Let's discuss the Premier League boys and whip it through it here. Manchester United getting the 1-0 victory. Marcus Rashford on the score sheet once again. Rashford has scored more Premier League goals than any other player since the World Cup with 11 goals. Only Victor Osimhen netting more goals in that period across Europe's top five leagues. Marcus Rashford has now equaled Andy Cole with 121 goals at Manchester United. More stats to come from that game, but I also want to touch upon the fact that Newcastle absolutely hammered your former club there, Nige, by 5-1. They beat West Ham. Wilson with a double, Joe Linton with a double, Alexander Isak with a goal. Zuma did pull one back when it was 2-0 up, but really great to see for Callum Wilson as well. He is now, 30 goals in 72 appearances for Newcastle. And one little stat I want to throw at you here is only Wayne Rooney with 14, Michael Owen with 13 have scored more Premier League goals against West Ham than Callum Wilson, who is now 12. Not bad for him. That is his favourite opponent. Nigel, I'm coming to you. Biggest story of the Premier League match day today. United get the win. Newcastle get a massive win, and West Ham once again in serious trouble.
West Ham have been in big trouble for a long time, so I'm not honestly surprised, if I'm honest. And I think for me, this was the game to watch. Obviously, I know Manchester United are pushing for top four, so and Newcastle, but this was the game because of the implications on both ends of the table. Newcastle pushing for a top four, West Ham trying to stay out of the relegation zone. That's a big loss. And it wasn't just a fact of a loss. It was a statement loss. 5-1, I think it finished off. Half the stadium was empty. I personally think that David Moyes' time at the club is going to be up now, because you look at what's happened recently with loads of managers who've lost their jobs in the bottom half of the table. Some teams it's worked out for and reacted well. And we're all easily influenced by what we see. So I would not be surprised if what's happened recently, that the West Ham owners get influenced by other clubs' decisions and maybe call it a day now while they've still got a chance to maybe stay up. But Newcastle were sensational. West Ham were poor, especially when you come out in the second half and to concede that goal to trying to play out the back. It was just, it was terrible. A terrible performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with Nigel. It feels like it's time now for David Moyes and West Ham. To be honest, it's felt like it's been time for a while. You know, it predates this result. But I think there's a large element of truth in what Nigel's saying, in that West Ham will be looking at what other clubs are doing around them. You know, not all of those clubs are getting the new manager bounce they would have hoped for, but you know, everyone sort of believes in that, especially when you're down at the wrong end of the table and at this point of the season. And I really, I cannot see any way that Moyes keeps West Ham in the Premier League. So I think that, you know, that decision has to be taken sort of in the coming hours, really. And even then, I'm not sure it's necessarily a guarantee that West Ham are suddenly going to find some form and be performing. But I think it's the only sort of card they have left to play now. They have to gamble, because if things stay as they are, they're not going to pick up enough points to avoid relegation between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I agree with you both there. Certainly not happy to see West Ham in that type of position. But for Newcastle, while their goal difference right now defensively compared to the goals that they're scoring is absolutely sensational, moving back into third with that victory. Mike, real quickly from you, we touch upon Manchester United. I just want to throw something at you here. Manchester United in 21-22, 38 games, 16 wins. Manchester United in 22-23, 28 games, and already reached 16 wins. Things are going pretty well. Back to winning ways for Ten Hag.
Yeah, they just needed me to go on my usual weekly loss rant. to get them the little kick in the backside to get going. What I love about this United team in this year is their ability to react when things haven't gone well. After Arsenal, they play EFL Cup semifinal, they react. After the 7-0 drubbing against Liverpool, Europa League, they react, 4-1 performance. Today, against Brentford, that sting of the result at the start of the season, every United fan was thinking about revenge. You had to get a statement performance, but it makes no difference if you don't get the 3 points. And it was job done. Now you move forward to the next match, which is Everton at the weekend. And a little thing called the Europa League quarterfinals against Sevilla. Tricky fixture, getting wins and getting back to form is massive.
Good ugly win, Mike. Good ugly win. Well done.
3 points.
Yeah. They all count here. One little stat before we do move on. Most goals scored for Manchester United in a single season since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. Zlatan scored 28 back in 16-17. Bruno scored 28 in 2021. Marcus Rashford already on 28 all competitions in this season as well. So expect him to break that. Let's turn our attention to what's happening around the rest of the Premier League. We obviously want to discuss what's happening at Chelsea right now. JJ, I'll come to you on this one. Frank Lampard, I think we were all kind of interested to see him sitting in the stands yesterday, and it looks like he's open to accept the Chelsea job until the end of the season. Is this a good idea? Do you understand this idea? Where the hell did this come from?
I mean, this is absolute nonsense. I mean, does nobody in this situation have any shame? Does Lampard not have some professional pride?
Before you go in quickly, JJ, let me just say, maybe he might have been hanging out with Todd Bowley that time. He was in LA a couple of years back, so Todd Bowley might have met him, and that's why they kind of get this opportunity. So you can't blame
him. He's also a legend at the club.
So what?
Make him an ambassador. Don't make him the manager of the club.
I mean, if Lampard wants back in one of his former clubs, he should take the West Ham job, Nige.
Yeah, maybe coming for that.
That one. I'm just going to say this, Ian. How are you going to take someone back that was in charge, that you sacked, that the club sacked, and then the manager who came in won the Champions League with a below par squad, and he upset a lot of senior players? Didn't like Lampard, and you want to take him back now in this situation where they're not playing like a team. There's no identity in Chelsea. It's a bunch of individuals. As soon as he comes back in that dressing room, those same senior players who didn't really take to Lampard, how do you think they're going to react again now?
But equally, this now makes it a really, really difficult job for Bruno Salto while he remains in charge, because he knows already that not only are Chelsea lining up a long-term replacement for him, logically, sort of from the summer, they're lining up a short-term replacement for him as well. It might not happen in time for the weekend, so he might still have a game in charge. It's a very, very messy situation. And I think, to be honest, while you've already got an interim boss in place, why do you need to appoint another interim boss while you're pursuing the main target? It's nonsense.
Yeah, if I'm a main target...
I don't like how I'm sounding like Roy Keane, but it is madness.
But if I'm a main target, I'm having second thoughts already when I see this. This tells you how toxic the club is. This tells you how directionless the club is when they're making a calamity of things. When you have a manager that's going to come in the future, the thing you do is clear the runway. And if it's Julian Nagelsmann who wants to feel like the main man and want to know that, hey, we believe in you, this is going to be your project, seeing this is going to put major question in whether it's his mind or Luis Enrique's.
After watching that game today from Real Madrid against Barcelona, any chance, Nigel, here for Chelsea? Need to score, don't they?
No chance. They've got absolute no chance. I mean, I watched Chelsea in their last game, and they were absolutely... They're a bunch of individuals. That is it. That's all I see, is a bunch of individuals. I don't see a team. I don't see a simple style of play. They all play like a bunch of individuals, and they look like they barely even like each other. There's no real togetherness in that Chelsea team. And for me, it's great to see Conte back. He is their best midfielder. I don't care how much they play for Enzo Fernandez. The influence that he has and what he brings to that Chelsea team is still unbelievable, and it's priceless. But put it in. If we're all sitting back as managers now, from sit outside looking in, how could you really say you want to go to a club like Chelsea with everything that you've seen? And let's be real. From what we've seen, what manager do you honestly think Todd Bowley is going to give full control to? As a manager going into Chelsea, you know now, no matter how much of a story you sell Todd Bowley, how much of a presentation you do, he's going to do what he wants. You're not going to be able to bring in who you want and do what you want. So why would you go to a club like that?
No, it's a great question. I actually brought it up to Fabrizio on our show earlier this week. I was like, have you heard of a coach or any coach that actually doesn't want to go to Chelsea because of the mess they're in right now? I would imagine, and I mean, obviously, to me personally, I could imagine that Nagelsmann maybe is target number one for them, but they're trying to convince, you know, the move between Bayern Munich to make it happen or Nagelsmann to take the job now, because it's very difficult to go in now with what's happening with Chelsea, be able to turn everything around and then have success. But they are still in major competition, and obviously European competition, and still, you know, it's a bit of a mess in the Premier League right now, but still they're a decent squad of players. If you can get them ticking, you might be able to make something happen. I just wonder if there's coaches out there who are turning this opportunity down. JJ, there was obviously rumour that Luis Enrique was spotted in London today. Any more on that?
I haven't heard anything sort of developing on that sort of more so than we've already heard today. But sort of adding to your point, you know, that's such a risk for somebody like a Nagelsmann, you know, and I think probably the managers who are looking at this sort of most, you know, sort of eyeing this as a potential next job, you know, with a bit of hunger, with a bit of appetite, are probably those who have sat out of the game for the best part of the last season. So I'm thinking, you know, the Pochettinos, you know, guys who actually want to get back into the day to day, whereas Nagelsmann, you know, this would be like out of the frying pan into the fire. You know, this is the risk that somebody like Nagelsmann would have of bad form building up in the last couple of weeks of this season, then leading him into next season, you know, sort of under a cloud already. The list would be the risk would be quite substantial. So I think that's probably why a lot of potential candidates are approaching this one with caution. You know, Enrique has sort of thrown his hat into the ring for England, you know, but not for Spurs when Antonio Conte was sacked, and then suddenly Chelsea. You know, that position opens up, and I think his plans have probably moved forward a little faster than he hoped as well. So, you know, I think we keep hearing all of this about, oh, you know, Chelsea are going to do an exhaustive search into, you know, a potential head coach. I mean, if Enrique has visited London today, you know, that's fairly far advanced. It doesn't sound like it's going to be that much, you know, more exhaustive, you know, if they're already potentially interviewing candidates and they're coming all the way to London for it.
Certainly a wild situation at Chelsea Football Club, and to everybody out there who's jumping in our chats, including you, Vic, I can see all of them right there. Jealous Manchester United, PSG and Aston Villa fans on this panel.
Jealous of what? Have you seen where Unai Emery's got us in the table?
Oh, jeez. Go to break.
That's why I love Chelsea fans. They're just so in denial of how much of a mess their club is right now. Man. And it's turned into a play toy for Todd Bowley. That's the reality. And
also in denial.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I look at João Felix as well, Ian. Fantastic performance, but he looks like he's playing for a move somewhere else already. Like he looks like he's bored of London already.
I'd love to hear it. Not many people saying that, that's for sure. All right, let's get to a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss what's happening around the rest of Europe.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob? Well, all
right. Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year. You dig? Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, Coppa Italia is back, and welcome back into everybody else out there watching House of Champions. Coppa Italia is obviously going through two legs at this stage right now. Juventus played to a 1-1 draw with Inter Milan yesterday. Cremonese going down by 2-0 against Fiore. I think that's how the game finished up there. Fiorentina now won 9 consecutive games in a single season, considering all competitions for the first time since 1960. So congratulations to Fiorentina, who look like they are... they're the real deal coming to the end of this campaign. But the real discussion and talking point was what happened at the latter stages of the Juve against Inter Milan game. Lukaku targeted once again with racial abuse, taken to social media once again, received a red card. And by the way, I don't understand the red card, why he received the red card. For shushing fans, for putting your fingers to your lips, I don't understand why a player receives a red card after scoring that late equalizer from the penalty spot. Mike, I'll come to you first on this one. Okay, it's a complicated situation. Obviously, we got to discuss the fact that the game was an interesting game. But I'm getting fed up with this bullshit racist abuse against Lukaku in particular, but to all players around Europe. It's not just happening in Italy. Yeah. It's happening everywhere right now.
Well, how many incidents have we counted on this year where it's happened La Liga, it's happened Serie A? And this is the type of shit that needs to stop in football. And I'm sick and tired of it gaining notoriety in the moment, and then it's forgotten about. Nothing happens. Serie A, this happens again and again, and nothing happens. I'm interested to see how his teammates react, first and foremost. We've seen this happen with Juve, where their own players have gotten racist abuse, and players like Bonucci reacted horrifically wrong. I think this is awful handling of the situation from Serie A, from the referee in itself. And at the end of the day, you know, I really hope that Inter, they galvanize around Lukaku and this becomes a thing that becomes a kind of good spot for them. But it's a shit situation.
Can I just jump in real quickly and tell you, I'm kind of fed up with us actually having to discuss it so much on our show, because we've been doing this show for what, about 4 or 5 months now? And how many times has it come up? I don't know, maybe 9 times in the last 5, 6 months. I mean, realistically, and you made a great point there, Michael. Realistically, we're not going anywhere right now. We're not getting better. Football's not getting better. It's getting worse as far as I'm concerned. The taking a knee, you see the English teams in particular in European competition, one side takes a knee now. The taking a knee has become a bit of a farce. I mean, I have no idea how we step forward from a situation like this, especially when it comes to Italian football, where it has been directed at Lukaku repeatedly. JJ, your thoughts?
I mean, I think, you know, there have to be some real serious punishments. I don't think it's helped the situation that Inter Milan took so long to react to it as well. Yes, they put out a statement, but I mean, even some of Lukaku's former clubs had, you know, put, you know, their statements public before Inter reacted to it. So, you know, I think that there needs to be, you know, a lot more sort of awareness, motivation, you know, from, you know, clubs when their players are racially abused like this, because it is such, you know, a repetitive, recurrent topic and one that, you know, badly needs to be stamped out. But ultimately, you know, this comes down to identifying and really properly punishing, you know, those found guilty of, you know, such awful behavior. You know, it's not enough to give them a slap on the wrist and say, oh, you know, next time you're going to get a stadium ban. Ban them, you know, ban them now. You know, don't allow them back in stadiums again, because this behavior is unacceptable. And it's the only way that people will actually start waking up, you know, and changing, you know, these awful habits that they've had and been allowed to continue to have for far too long from a footballing standpoint.
Nigel?
I agree with JJ. I think it needs to be tougher, and I agree with Mike. My take on it, Ian, is this. It's Italian football. I'm not surprised. Nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to be done. I think for me, when you talk to the players like Lukaku and all those players, they need to understand they're a different generation. In my generation, when I got racially abused, none of my teammates stood up for me. Only the black ones and ethnic ones kind of understood it. But for my white colleagues to stand up for me, they weren't interested. It wasn't them. It was new to them.
Did you never have a player who stood up for you, Nigel, throughout, obviously, your career?
Did in our generation, though. Like, when we got racially abused, it was, I get on with it. Showed him, like, that reverse psychology mentality. That was not me. I'm more of a Django than I am Samuel Jackson in Django. That's the type of person I am. I'm more Django. So, all I will say is, to the likes of Lukaku and them lot, don't be quiet. Don't take it. Don't make it acceptable. Any of your teammates to try and tell you to go a different way, oh, this and that, tell them to kiss your black ass. Be strong. Your generation is different. You have the power now. And I just wish sometimes a lot more of their colleagues in the dressing room will come out straight away instead of waiting and letting it settle in until it becomes too unacceptable. Then they want to come and say something. Like, say something. These are your colleagues and your teammates. And one last thing, the reason why it's going so much is we have to be real about society. Look at the amount of idiots in politics right now in what they're doing around the world, not just America or England, the amount of so-called politicians and what they're doing and what they're saying. Why are we surprised that the day-to-day idiot who can't even spell the word politics is acting like that? Because the people who have been voting in power are acting just as bad and saying just as dangerous stuff. And this is why these people are being inspired.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well said from all three of you there. And I think, obviously, as former players, we've all sort of experienced it in one way or another on the pitch, which is something you never want to say. But on the pitch, we have experienced it. And it's tremendously important to all three of us as well, including you, JJ, as well, obviously, going through it in France and what's happened politically there right now this year as well. But for me personally, just coming back from St. Pauli and, you know, watching a club that fights against discrimination like FC St. Pauli does across the whole of Europe. FC St. Pauli in particular, my club, obviously, I'm going to always boast about them for what they do. For they use soccer as a reason to fight against discrimination across all forms. It's not just racism, it's homophobia, sexism, whatever it may be. But it touches my soul so deeply that the fact that football is second to them. Football is not number one to them. Humans are number one. And the only way we change this bullshit is by making humans number one. The reason why we don't stop games in the middle of it, fine clubs, ban fans from stadium, stop clubs from playing, is because of this, is because of money. Because everybody out there is interested in the number one to everybody, and that is money. And it should never be over a human being. I'll leave it at that before we try to finish on some sort of a positive, because we have to. Let's turn to the German Cup. It was the DFB Pokal. Bayern Munich getting knocked out yesterday by Freiburg. Borussia Dortmund getting knocked out today by Leipzig. Leipzig have now reached the DFB Cup semifinals four times in the last five seasons, more than any other team. Bayern Munich's elimination from the DFB Pokal means that they'll go 3 years without lifting the trophy for the first time this century. Michael, let's turn it to a positive as we finish our show here. Not great for Bayern and Borussia Dortmund, but good for Leipzig.
No, and great for Freiburg. I was watching the match yesterday. What a freaking missile from Freiburg. I can't even pronounce the guy's name. Is it Hofler?
Lucas Hofler, yep.
Hofler, yeah. Holy shit, man. I was watching the game and it looked like, okay, Upamecano gets the first goal. Leroy Sané doing the weaving, dribble left. It was almost like watching a video game. And then when that ball went in the back of the net, Bayern looked stunned. The whole arena looked stunned. And for the game to come down on a handball, on a penalty kick, which was a correct call on Jamal Musiala, I thought Bayern was a bit arrogant in how they approached that. If you don't finish your chances against a team that's in the top 10 of Bundesliga, the Bundesliga is becoming much more competitive, and I think Bayern got found out against a Freiburg team that was opportunistic and got through.
You know, listen, I just got to jump in real quickly because I haven't seen my good friend Nigel Riococher for a while. You know, I've been in Germany, and a lot has happened since I've been in Germany. Apparently, not everything is right at Bayern Munich. Nigel, remember all that BS you were giving me this season? Apparently not as all well at Bayern. Your thoughts?
Ian, you've got way more experience than me and you know it. How serious are Bayern taking that cup? Let's reflect right now.
Oh, they do.
Tell me the two priorities for Bayern Munich this season now.
No, they do. They take that competition incredibly seriously. No doubt about it. They are desperately disappointed and immediately Tuchel apologizing for what happened yesterday. They do take it serious.
Okay. Well, again, I don't want to talk about Bayern Munich unless it's Champions League and after they win the German the Bundesliga. So not interested. Go on, JJ.
No, listen, JJ, I don't want to come to you on the German Cup here unless you have something to say here. But I will just say that was a good apology from Nigel Riococher for all the nonsense that he has given me all season long about Bayern Munich. Apparently, things are not
They're
all
still
well.
In. They what? Destroyed Dortmund to go back top of the league. They're still in the Champions League with a very good chance of qualifying. Like, how can you say always wrong at Bayern Munich? And they got Thomas Tuchel.
Just got they beat got Thomas.
Of all managers, one manager that Pep Guardiola would not want to face in Champions League is Tuchel.
First time in 24 games they just lost at home to Freiburg. You know, so if that doesn't tell me that something's not all right there, then you know it is what it is. I gotta move on, Nigel. I'll accept your apology. Thanks very much. Let's go to France. JJ, it was an absolute banger from Ludovic Blas, the winner for Nantes. It did finish 1-0, right, against Lyon.
It did indeed. So probably no European football for Lyon, you know, coming up next season. It's been a couple of years now on the bounce that Lyon haven't reached the continental competitions. You know, huge, huge setback for, you know, such a big, proud French club, obviously under American ownership now, or sort of in the process of, you know, sort of coming under the American pavilion. You know, hugely disappointing, but equally, you know, two back-to-back Coupe de France finals for Nantes. That is very impressive. You know, when you consider that Antoine Comboiri came in, Nantes are on the verge of getting relegated out of Ligue 1, goes back to one of the clubs that he played at as a player, and then, you know, suddenly leads them back into Europe, had some great memorable matches at Stade de la Beaujoire, which, you know, is fantastic to see when it's in full flow, as it was tonight. Fans running onto the pitch to celebrate, and what a goal it was from Ludovic Blas. Now, what is really interesting about Coupe de France now is if Nantes don't win it as defending champions, then the winners will either be Toulouse, who are fresh back in Ligue 1 after getting themselves promoted from Ligue 2, or second division Annecy, who obviously knocked out Marseille, Mike's beloved Marseille, and could still get relegated from Ligue 2. So don't say that Coupe de France doesn't deliver, because it really is the domestic cup competition believe has the most magic in Europe.
Ligue 2. They can get
relegated from the second tier. And then this is their first season fully professional.
That is way more interesting than the Bundesliga. Thank you.
It just makes me think what might have been a JJ great breakdown of everything. As I see things shaping up, I'm just like, you know, this is the plight of being an OM fan, a diehard OM fan like I am. Oh, this was their cup to win. It's their cup to win.
JJ, real quickly before we do move on, Toulouse get the job done.
You know what? I'd love to say that they can, but they've gone on a bit of a blip of form recently, and Annecy's form in Ligue 2 has been pretty woeful since they knocked Marseille out. So who knows? Maybe they're a team for the big occasion, but it's not the first time that we've seen lower league clubs reach the Coupe de France final. It actually happens more often than you think in France. So I wouldn't rule it out. I definitely think it'll be a close encounter, but ultimately, I think this is now a really good opportunity for Nantes to win back-to-back Coupe de France titles.
Rafa with a great comment right there. It is theirs to lose.
Very, very well good.
Said right there. I'm not sure if that's better than Nigel's pronunciation of Ligue 2. Nigel, give us one more.
Ligue 2. Ligue 2. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Niche.
Continental Nigel is the best, Nigel.
And for Des, das ist scheiße.
I know that.
All right, we got to get out of here, guys. It was a great show here. We did have our time stamps. We didn't stick by any one of them there. Sorry to our producer Des, who's trying his best to get it under 50 minutes. We're not far away, but we did a good job today. I appreciate everybody out there, including Michael Hood, Jonathan Johnson, and there's Alexandre Lacazette up there. No, sorry, it's Nigel Rio Coker up there with the beard. I appreciate you, boys. It's great to see you all always. We are back again on Friday as we preview the weekend coming up. A big shout out and a big thank you to everybody for listening to House of Champions. Take a minute to leave us a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere else you listen to your podcast. So make sure you obviously leave us a rating and a review, but also, as we recognize, we're available on video. So subscribe to us on YouTube. We appreciate the follows, everybody. Guys, great as always. I appreciate you as always. JJ, enjoy tomorrow's Coupe de France. I hope we see an upset there, because I do like the underdog getting the job done. But to you other boys, we'll see you again Friday.
Wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.